The things we'll gain from automating more of our lives, I confess they actually sound pretty good to me. A car that will do the driving for me? Robots that will clean the bathroom and do the laundry? Honestly, I would sacrifice a little bit of free will if it meant I would never have to scrub the grout again. But technology writer Nicholas Carr warns that the cost of smarter machines could be dumber humans. Carr is the guy who wrote a blockbuster article a few years ago called "Is Google Making Us Stupid?" Now he's worried that the new age of automation could mean that we'll lose basic skills like how to drive or how to read a map. He spells it out in a new book called The Glass Cage, and Steve Paulson caught up with him.
Nick, how worried are you about automation and how it's affecting our lives?
I'm pretty worried. My worries tend to be a little bit different from the worries that are in the news right now and getting a lot of play. And those worries tend to focus on massive job losses and, you know, huge unemployment as robots kind of take over. It could happen, but my own fears are more about becoming too dependent on computers and robots to the extent that we begin losing our own skills.
Well, let's take one or two examples of this. Automation has become a big thing in medical settings. Doctors use this technology, for instance, during surgery or during diagnosis of trying to figure out what's going on with their patients. What's happening there?
Well, I think you see both good and bad. You know, on the one hand, if you look at surgical robots, which are really just not so much replacing the surgeon as extending the surgeon's ability, you see that surgeons are able to do more in different kinds of surgery. But more interesting to me is the use of electronic medical records, both to collect information about patients and their visits and to do diagnoses. So what we see there is the primary care physician working more and more in concert with software.
So your fear, I presume, is that the expertise of the doctor who has years of often deciphering strange things and making expert diagnoses, that could be lost.
Or it could be diminished, certainly. What we know about skill, and particularly very subtle skills, is that you need to practice them in order to both gain them and keep them strong. And so we might look, in the doctor's office is a very good example, we might look to software or robots, for instance, to make things more efficient, but the cost comes from distancing the practitioner from the actual work. And over time, what you start to get is a diminishment of skill. And then you get a cycle of you know, what economists call de-skilling, because as you begin to lose your skills, then you become even more dependent on the software.
Right. And another one of your test cases is automated flight. Now, we know more and more pilots use automation to fly planes, and statistically, this has made air travel safer, but you also seem to be worried about this.
Yeah, I think aviation is kind of the perfect sort of test case for automation, where you see both the very good effects of being able to hand over some chores to computers, working together, the human pilot in the software. We've seen great advances in airline safety. But more recently, what we've seen is that pilots have handed over so much of the work to autopilot systems and other flight automation systems that really the pilot is only in manual control of the plane for a couple of minutes, usually for most flights these days. And the evidence shows that in those rare cases when something goes wrong and a disaster happens, it seems to be more and more linked to the loss of pilot skills resulting from overdependency on automation. What happens sometimes is the autopilot fails. It might be you run into some heavy weather or you have a technical difficulty. You know, no technology is flawless. And so when that happens, suddenly the pilots, they have to take command of the plane in a situation that's usually very dangerous, which is why the technology failed. And as a result, you start seeing pilots make mistakes.
Now, can we actually point to specific crashes and basically say, well, it was because the pilots did the wrong thing when the automation failed?
Yes. One of the most tragic recent plane crashes was in 2009 when an Air France Airbus that was flying from Rio de Janeiro to Paris disappeared out of the sky over the Atlantic, and it took a couple of years to find the plane and to lifted out of the ocean. But what the investigators found when they studied the flight data recorder and the voice recorder was that the plane had hit some bad weather. The external sensors that feed airspeed information to the computers had iced over. And of course, once you take that crucial information away from the computers can't fly the plane because they don't have the data necessary. And so the autopilot system shut down, and suddenly the pilots had to take over. And the pilot that was in charge, instead of taking a maneuver necessary to avoid going into a stall, an aerodynamic stall, which essentially required the pilot to descend in order to pick up speed, the pilot pulled back on the stick and raised the nose of the plane, slowed the plane down. The plane did go into a stall and plummeted 30,000 feet or so into the ocean and killed everybody on board.
Now, we've been talking about existing technologies. One that we'll probably see in the near future is self-driving cars. Google already has this in development, and there are a few test cars out there. Do you think we'll be seeing a lot of this in the coming years?
I think we still don't know exactly how much driving computers, real-world driving computers, will be able to take over and when they'll be able to take it over. I think there's some amount of overpromise going on here. Automated cars, robotic cars, are very good in tightly controlled situations where there isn't all that much uncertainty, such as driving on limited access highways, where most of the testing of Google's car and other robotic cars has been done.
I have to say, my gut reaction is trying to navigate a lot of traffic in a busy city to turn that over to the computer sounds like a nightmare.
I would argue we're still quite a long way from being able to do that. I think it's possible that what we'll see is that you'll have, for instance, robotic trucks taking over long-haul trucking. But then you'll have to take over again in certain situations. And of course, in some ways, it's even more dangerous on the road because your margin for error, since cars tend to travel very close together and lanes and roads aren't very wide, your margin for error there is very, very small. You have to kind of take over in a matter of, you know, a couple of seconds if you want to avoid a car crash.
So, well, I'm assuming that the argument on the other side that Google would make is that the computer sensors can see the encroaching car faster than you might be able to recognize it yourself. That actually would make driving safer.
And I think that's right, that if we use automation wisely, then I think we can have automation that helps us drive better.
Well, I mean, the other side of it is a lot of people, including me, like to drive. I don't really want to turn it over to a computer. I mean, maybe not always on, you know, the long haul over a cross-country trip, but normal city driving, yeah, I'd rather do that.
And I think that's a big blind spot, particularly among people in Silicon Valley, the people developing these systems. Most people, and studies are pretty clear about this, most people are like you and are like me. They actually enjoy driving. It's a time when people can be in charge of a complex machine themselves, and there's a certain amount of pleasure in being in control and maneuvering a vehicle through traffic, and that points to something, a broader kind of reality, that people like to do things. We like to struggle with hard challenges. We like to overcome them. We like to develop our expertise.
Right. Well, the great promise of automation, of robots, is it will make our lives easier. The question is, does it also make us happier? Or actually, is it sort of taking away some of the stuff that we really enjoy, but we may not always realize?
I think there's a tension in us ourselves that we think we want our lives to be easier and convenient and to hand over everything to machines. But then when you look at psychological studies of human experience, it turns out that actually developing skills and acting in the world and facing and overcoming challenges is actually a source of great satisfaction and great fulfillment. And if you just make things easy for people, they're not very happy. And it strikes me that we're pushing ourselves, and technologists are pushing us as well, into a world where we're not going to be challenged, that every time we face a challenge, there's going to be a software engineer or a computer company saying, well, let's automate that.
And there are obviously also some pretty big ethical issues that come up. I mean, just to go back to the example of the self-driving car, I mean, if there's an accident, if someone gets killed, who's to blame? Who do you sue? Is it the computer system of the car manufacturer, or is it the person in the car? And then at a far more mundane level, but kind of a fascinating level, I mean, you write about the Roomba, the robot vacuum cleaner that sucks up all the little stuff in its path. I mean, it doesn't make any distinction between the dust bunny or the insect. It doesn't distinguish between life and non-life. And those are the kinds of things we probably think about while we're vacuuming.
Right. Many people might think of the example of as a trivial one that, you know, okay, so we let the Roomba loose it on our carpet and it sucks up a few crickets as well as all the dust and everything. But a lot of people think about things like that. You know, that you see a cricket in front of you or a little insect and you think, do I really want to kill it or should maybe I make an effort to take it outside? And it tells us something about the new world we're now entering as we create robots that are able to act autonomously in the world. They're going to come up against ethically complex situations. And so the question is, how do we program an ethical sense, a moral sense, into machines? And beyond that, who gets to do that programming? Whose morality is programmed into these robots? Does somehow the robotic car's morality, the way it determines whether it's going to, you know, run over a squirrel or a dog or try to swerve to avoid them, is that, are we going to be able to reflect the driver's morality somehow? Or is it ultimately going to be the morality of the insurance company or the government or the software programmer? There's no way you can have an autonomous robot acting in the real world without requiring that robot sooner or later to make moral decisions.
That's Nicholas Carr talking with Steve Paulson about his new book, The Glass Cage: Automation and Us.